down a threat to decency and humanity.
Last week, along with cocaine,
what is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea.
Because of oppression has
a new world.
You're listening to The Alchemical Tech Revolution, and I am your host, Wayne McRoy. And Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said unto them, See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of thy coming, and of the end of the world? And Jesus answered, and said unto them, Take heed, that no man deceive you. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And ye shall hear of wars, and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Matthew 24, verses 1 through 6. Good evening, everyone. Tonight we're going to discuss the idea of wars and rumors of wars. And what does this mean, and how does it pertain to the scripture verse we just read here? Rumors of wars. What's going on in the world today? The concept of wars and rumors of wars written about in this verse in the Bible, this delineates that there's a different type of warfare being conducted than what was normally accepted as what the definition of warfare would be. So what's being implied through this verse is that, talking about rumors of wars, it's talking about a different type of warfare than what is customarily thought of. Something that will only have come about near this time of the end, the last days, as being delineated here in the good book. It's a different type of warfare. So we see militaristic battles and militaristic conflicts going on, but that's not what this is talking about primarily. And this is where the delineation lies, okay? We've always had uprisings and conflicts and stuff all throughout our history, all throughout the history of civilization. So that being the case, this is sort of a normal aspect of how society has worked for the past several millennia. So knowing that, this is talking about something totally different here. So it says here in verse 7, For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, and pestilences, and earthquakes in divers places. And we're going to stop right there for a second. So notice the shift from verse 6 to verse 7 here. It's talking about ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. And it says, See that ye are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Well, we see from the context of the verse here, it's talking about, once again, going back to this idea of wars and rumors of wars, and it's talking about nation rising against nation, kingdom against kingdom. And then it names famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in divers places. And it's linking those to this idea of war or rumors of wars, okay? This is talking about this different style of warfare. This is a different concept than what people are used to. The use of pestilence and famine and earthquakes, or manipulating the weather as part of this war strategy. We see all these different things happening in the world, and a lot of these can actually be directly equated to this quiet war that's been going on since at least 1954 that we could trace it back to. And many people probably don't have a clue what I'm talking about, but basically we've been in a state of domestic warfare since 1954 when the international elite declared war against the public. They wanted to eliminate the middle class, and they wanted to dominate all aspects of society and control all the wealth and resources, and control all the human resources as well. Mind control tactics and different things of this nature they've used. And this is outlined clearly in a document titled Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. It talks about this. Many of the things that have been said in that document hold true. And this also directly relates to the Bible verse here. And this description of unconventional warfare. A different type of warfare. A warfare so subtle in its operation that you don't even know that you're in a conflict or in a war. And we've been involved in this for almost 70 years now, at least bare minimum, that this has been going on. And we've got very little recourse in fighting back because of the nature of the weapons being used against us. And this is what it's talking about. And this encapsulates all these other ideas. The ability to use a weapon of war to create a famine or a pestilence, earthquakes. In many places, we've seen that going on. We've seen the wholesale manipulation of weather going on. I don't think it's questionable by anybody who's really looked into it closely. It's demonstrable that paramilitary organizations and governments can control and manipulate the weather. And the same could be said for earthquakes as well. All of these things are part of this grand war machine that's used to manipulate people in this unconventional warfare model that's been going on. And that's clearly here what's been delineated in the book of Matthew here. This is what Jesus was talking about. A different kind of warfare going on. So when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, it's not just talking about boots on the ground. The silent warfare going on. The silent weapon systems being used against society as a whole. And this has been going on for a long time, and it's about your mind. Conquering your mind. These things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. So he's saying this is not quite the end of the age or the end of the world here, as his disciples were asking him about. We're at a crossroads here in the world. We're at a position where we need to be mindful of what's going on around us and recognize these signs in the season that we're in. And verse 8 here says, all these are the beginning of sorrows. So we're at this phase, this junction point in history where it's a change of the age. It's the end of one era and the beginning of a new era. We're seeing the birth pangs of that going on right now. These are the signs and stuff we were told to look for. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Well, what do we know about that right now? Anybody that identifies as a Christian right now, it's not really a thing that's respected by the world. Christians have been ridiculed for the past several decades at least now, bare minimum. They've been ridiculed, called hypocrites, thought very little of. And a lot of this is by design, because many of the mainline Christian churches have all been infiltrated in some way, shape, or form with false doctrine and different teachings like that. And they've all been kind of called to account for the things that they say and do and teach. And, you know, very much of what's taught in a lot of these mainline churches is very hypocritical in and of itself. So this is a sign of the times, really, when it comes down to it. I mean, nobody's perfect, right? And we know this. And this is what we're taught. But at the same token, some of the doctrines they're teaching don't stand up to scrutiny. And people see through it and understand that. So Christians have really been given a bad rap in the past several decades. Christians are largely hated by different religious organizations and different groups around the world. And they're also shown a bit of disdain by your average secular person as well. Stereotype of what Christianity and Christians are has come across, and it's left a bad taste in people's mouth. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. Well, offended. Who's offended by everything anymore, folks? Everybody's offended by everything. That's part of the culture. That's part of the social engineering. Part of this silent weapon system that's been used against us in this quiet war. We've been engineered and indoctrinated to be offended by each other's core beliefs and values. And some of the different things that we talk about. some of the belief systems we have. We've been taught to be offended by all these things, and it's really ramped up the past couple of years, especially with the advent of social media here. And it says in verse 11, it says, "And many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many." Well, there's no doubt in my mind we're living in the age of deception. And verse 12 here says, "And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold." I think that holds true these past couple of years. We see the love of many has waxed cold due to the events that have gone on, these socially engineered events of society. They've made people distrustful of one another. They've dehumanized people in many ways, make them wear a mask and cover their face so you can't really identify with their emotion or anything like that, or identify with them in any way, shape, or form. It's a dehumanization campaign as well. This is also part of the silent weapon system that's been used against us, as we can see here. Look at how your family members, your own family members, people who profess to love you, have treated you. Look at what's gone on in families all across the world with this whole idea. The love of many has indeed waxed cold, and that's all part of the design of how this weapon system works within this quiet war that's been going on covertly for many, many years now. And that's exactly what's being talked about here when we speak of rumors of wars. It's not just a rumor, it's really going on. But it delineates a different type of war and a different type of warfare than what has normally been accepted as war. Anyway, let's read on, because here's the good news here, folks, in the next verse, in verse 13. "But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved." And that's the good news. Okay, if we can endure, then we will be in a better place as such. As long as we endure, keep our faith in God, and keep close to Him, we can endure through this and make it through. A lot of it has to do with trying to stand in your integrity. Standing in your beliefs, standing in what you think is right. Stand for what's right. Don't back down. Don't let yourself get steamrolled by the pressures of the world. Stand firm. Defy this system that they're trying to implement right now. We could understand and we could recognize right from wrong. And not everybody recognizes right from wrong, sadly enough. But if you do, and you stand up for what's right, I don't think you'll regret that. That's the bottom line at the end of the day. You have to live with yourself. And know you've done everything you can to prevent bad things from happening to those that you love. And that's my viewpoint. That's how I see this with everything going on in society. I see people being maimed and harmed in all different kinds of ways with all the nonsense they've been able to implement and get people to believe. You have to be vocal about this stuff. Everybody's going to have to come to terms with this on their own. It's coming to you. Whether you've been able to avoid it all yet or not, it's coming your way if you've been lucky enough to not be affected by any of these things that have happened these past couple of years. It's coming, and it's going to be knocking on your door soon, and you're going to have to make a decision, and you're going to have to stand or fall. And that decision is up to the individual. So, you know, either you stand firm in your convictions and you overcome, or you just take the easy path and capitulate to what they want and take a gamble with your own life and the lives of your family and loved ones. That's where we're at in this world right now. So we could allow these things to affect us in a negative way, or we could take that negative and turn it into a positive. Use it to reinforce those things, those convictions that we stand for. So this is all part and parcel of the things going on. And this is all outlined here in the book of Matthew, chapter 24. And it says here in verse 14, "And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come." All across the world, the Christian gospel will be preached. It will be available for people to see and to read and to hear. And it says, "And then the end shall come." Well, the end of what, right? And this has been an argument all through theology for the past 2,000 years. What? The end of what? The end of the world? The end of the age? What? Depending upon the translation of the words of this you take, it largely means the end of the age in most of the translations. Some people take it as the end of the world and Armageddon-type imagery that comes to mind with that. So, are they wrong? I don't know. I mean, only time will tell. He's talking about the end of the age. And the next two verses, well, the next verse in particular, is one that I've read an awful lot into and looked into heavily and done some speculating as to what it could be talking about here. Verse 15. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. In parentheses here it says, whoso readeth, let him understand. So this is a message for anybody who has enough discernment to be able to understand what this is talking about here. And in my view, and I totally reserve the right to be completely wrong about this, in my view, I really firmly believe this is talking about the advent of transhumanism right here, when it's speaking of the abomination of desolation. Because think of it this way. It says elsewhere in the Bible, know ye not, ye are the temple of the Lord. Your body's the temple of the Lord, folks. So this is the holy place. So it says here, when you see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. Well, where's the holy place? You are, your body, your physiology, your mind. You are the temple, right? You are the holy place. So when you see the abomination of desolation standing there, well, what's the abomination of desolation? I think this is an artificial intelligence merged with human consciousness. So when you see this transpire, then understand, this is an abomination in the eyes of God. This is not something that belongs here in the natural world. Because transhumanism is just a transitory state between what they call human and post-human. So their ultimate goal with transhumanism, it'll be a very short transition period, is to become post-human. And this harkens back to ideas from guys like Nietzsche. The idea of the Übermensch, the Superman. All of these different ideas. This is essentially man becoming God. It's the same old story that goes back to the ancient mystery schools. Goes back through the secret societies. It's all about apotheosis. Man becoming God. See, and that's what this is talking about. Transhumanism. That's exactly what it's intended to be. Man trying to become God. And this, in my view, the merging of man and technology within the human body or the human form, this would be the abomination of desolation, in my view. Like I said, I reserve the right to be totally wrong about this and to be totally off base on all of it, but that's just my viewpoint, and everybody's entitled to their own viewpoints on this. But I don't really think it's far off the mark. I think it's certainly a feasible possibility. That could be the case, that could be what's being talked about. And that could be what the identity of what they call, quote-unquote, Antichrist could be. An artificial intelligence merged with human thought. It's possible. It's non-human. It doesn't belong here. It's not a natural entity. And it could be a consciousness born out of an unnatural process here. And that's just my viewpoint on things. But let's continue through the verse here and see what else it says next. Then it says in verse 16, then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. And that was all the way down from 17 through verse 20. So it's telling you here, when you see these things, it's telling you flee to the mountains. And this is a symbolic reference, okay? Fleeing to the mountains, that would be an inference to going to the high places or retreating to the high places. This is telling you to get your spirit and your soul right with God. That's what the high places refer to. This is what the mountain represents. The apex, the top of the mountain. get right with God, get back in communion and right fellowship with God, because the time's very short. And that's what it's talking about. And it's telling you, don't look back. When it says, let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of the house, it's telling you, just go to that place. Get yourself right with God. Don't look back. Don't try to take any of your baggage with you. And it also says that, woe unto them that are with child in those days. This is not the most opportune time to be raising children right now in the world today, is it? It's not the easiest of times. It's not like the best of times for raising children. The world is so confused and muddled right now. It's in such a state of disarray that raising children is difficult right now. But you know what? If you were called to do so, please do so. They are the future. And if we raise them right, then we will have a much better go at things here in the future. So it's not for everybody. Parenthood is not an easy thing by any means, but especially in these times, it takes a true spiritual warrior to power through and try to raise children right in these trying times. So it's more difficult for those folks, is what this is saying. And it also says, pray ye not that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. So basically it's telling you, pray that this doesn't happen to you when you're at your low point, okay? Winter, the low point. Pray this doesn't happen when you're at your lowest, because it'll be so much harder for you to stand tall against this, or to endure to the end, as it says earlier here in the scripture. It's God's will. He wants for none to perish, but that we all come to salvation and repentance. He wants none to perish. That's what he wants for everybody. He doesn't want anybody to perish. But if this happens and you are at a very low point in your life and you're in a very low position where you don't have much means to resist or no way to supply your needs for yourself, then you're in at a weakened point where you'll pretty much capitulate to anything, and that's not in your best interests long term. That's essentially what that means in my view. So verse 21, it says, for then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. So let's stop right there for a minute. So that was verse 21 and 22. So it's saying that we're going to go through this time of trouble that has not been since the beginning of the world, nor ever will be again. So this is what many theologians have referred to as the Great Tribulation, or the 7-year tribulation. Although we're going to go through trouble, if we endure to the end, we'll be okay. That's the bottom line, and I don't know, and I don't pretend to know what's going to happen, or how it's all going to come about, or how it's going to happen. All I know is if you put your faith and your trust in God, he'll see you through, and you can endure to the end if you could stand strong in your faith and have that right relationship with him. We could endure through whatever it is that we have to face here in the future. But this says, yeah, there will be great tribulation, such was not since the beginning of the world, and nor ever will be again after that. But it also says here that for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. So there's the good news. If you're one of those that wants to stand against this whole thing that's coming, rolling at us, and you want to stand firm in your convictions, God will reward you, and these times will be shortened. Let's continue on so that we could have a little more understanding of some of these things. Verse 23. Then, if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it was possible, they shall deceive the very elect. And then here, that's verse 24. And then in verse 25, Jesus here says, behold, I have told you before. So he's reinforcing a point here. Let's listen to the next verse here. When he says something like that, behold, I have told you before. What he's saying is, this is very important. Listen, open your ears up a little more and listen closely to what I'm going to say. So in verse 26, and here's where we need to listen, because he says, behold, I have told you before. In verse 26, it says, wherefore, If they shall say unto you, Behold, he is in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he is in the secret chambers. Believe it not. I'm going to stop there for a second. And we're going to go through this verse here again. I'm going to read it again. And I'm going to tell you a little something here about this, which maybe you picked up on yourself already, or maybe not. It depends on how familiar you are with some of these different aspects of things when you're looking at occult fraternities and things like that. So, he says here, Wherefore, if they shall say unto you, Behold, he is in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he is in the secret chambers, believe it not. Well, what is he talking about? He's in the desert? Don't go forth? What kinds of things have happened in the desert here, folks? Think back to 1946, 1947. Aleister Crowley's lackeys, Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard, did a big ritual out in the desert called the Babylon Working. They wanted to bring in the new Messiah for the new age. They totally saw this as their attempt to summon a new Messiah, so to say. So that's what this is talking about when it's saying, if they're saying, Behold, he's in the desert, don't go forth. It's not true. That's what he's telling you. And then also, he says, if they tell you, Behold, he is in the secret chambers, believe it not. Well, where's the secret chambers, folks? Well, this is down at your Masonic Lodge, isn't it? You're not going to find God in the Masonic Lodge. Down at the corner. In the secret temple. And that's not just the Masonic Lodge, that's all these secret society groups. He's telling you, you're not going to find God doing the things that they tell you to do in these occult fraternities. He's not going to be there. So when they tell you, Behold, he's in the secret chambers, believe it not. They'll tell you all sorts of things in these occult fraternities and these secret society groups. But Jesus, he made sure to make this an important point. He pointed it out beforehand. He said, Behold, I have told you before. That's his way of saying, listen up, listen again. I'm telling you this again. Don't believe it. If they tell you he's in the secret chambers, he's not going to be there. He doesn't do that. He said, In secret have I told you nothing. He reprimanded the disciples. In secret have I told you nothing. So the idea that there's this secret knowledge within these secret society groups and these occult fraternities that has somehow been related only to the adepts in that group by God himself is fallacy. Jesus said, In secret have I told you nothing. And here it is. He's reinforcing that point here. If they tell you, Behold, he is in the secret chambers, believe it not. That's not where he's at. If you look into many of the writings and the teachings of these secret society groups, and I do find value in a lot of it, I do, I'll be honest with you. There's a lot of good information in there and a lot of value there. But like I always caution people, there's always that little bit of poison in there. Be careful. Be careful. Use your discernment to be able to sort through all of that stuff. But that's why it's so important that we understand that Jesus has said, In secret have I taught you nothing. Because this is a stumbling block for these occult fraternities and secret society groups that tell you, you can become as Christ, you could be Christed. That it's an office, it's a position, it's a state of the soul. It's not something you can achieve on your own. Through hard work and study and determination and being a good enough disciple of these different groups, these occult fraternities. He made it real easy, folks. See, that's the thing, and this is why it's a stumbling block for these people, these occult fraternities, these different esoteric groups and stuff that teach you the ways of doing this, that you could achieve your salvation, you can work out, and they'll go ahead and they'll even try and quote Bible verses and stuff to back these ideas up. And they sound convincing at times, that you can work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Well, that's taken out of context in that view, but as far as this stuff goes, I mean, they teach you, you can perfect yourself, you can become as God, you don't need a savior, you can save yourself. Well, here's where the stumbling block idea comes in. Jesus Christ, God manifest here on the earth. God came, manifest himself as Jesus Christ here on earth, and he broke all those bounds. All of these ideas are bound up in the old legalistic views and viewpoints and concepts of the Old Testament. But he came and he broke all those bonds. He fulfilled the law and he made it simple. He made it simple. He made a way for people where there was none before. He bridged the gap for us. He stepped in our place and did that and gave it to everybody as a free gift. No strings attached. You could accept this free gift of salvation, and you could accept this free gift, and you don't have to be bound to all these legalistic ideas and legalistic spirits. That's what a lot of this is. It's all legalistic spirits that are bound up in a lot of these ideas that these secret society groups teach. I don't want to get too hung up on the point, but the whole objective here, the main point you should take away from this is he warned us. He told us, "In secret have I taught you nothing." You're not going to learn the secrets of the universe by joining a Freemason lodge, folks, or by becoming a Rosicrucian or any of these things. They don't know. They don't know. They pretend to know, and they do have some better views of things, and I do believe they do have some very good information about things within those groups. They have a better understanding of how things work, but they don't know 100% either. So this idea of ascended masters and all this stuff, Jesus never purported to be one. He never said, "I'm an ascended master, follow me." He never proclaimed that there were many ways to get to this salvation point. He never made those claims. He never taught people secret teachings either that many of these masters, these supposed ascended masters, claim to have done. He never taught his disciples secret teachings or secret wisdom or secret knowledge, secret practices, secret magical rituals or anything of that sort. In secret has he taught nothing. But yet they all called him master. They all called him teacher. But he was very open about everything, and this is wherein it becomes the stumbling block for these people, because they teach that even Jesus, because they can't deny, they cannot deny, and they will not deny, that he had a real effect here in this world, and he had real power and real authority. They acknowledge that. That's why they try to, capture him in the same fold with what they call these ascended master type ideas. And they say he was one of them, and that he taught people secret teachings and stuff too. Well, that's totally not true. He will tell you. He has told you numerous places, "In secret have I taught you nothing." That's not how it works, and this is where it creates a stumbling block, because you don't have to be a special adept or be initiated into this special secret order and be part of the club and take all the blood oaths and everything else that goes along with it. There may have been a time where that may have actually been the way that people had to do things. But he came, he fulfilled the law. And in so doing, he made a way for us. So now all these things are redundant. So he becomes the stumbling block for these masters and adepts in these different various occult orders. He's a stumbling block because this really takes away from their authority, doesn't it? If he made the way for everybody, all you have to do is accept the gift. Well, that goes contrary to everything that these secret society groups and different cult brotherhoods and stuff teach. They say that you could only do it through discipline and hard work and learning all these secrets and learning the different ritualism and all of these things. It's all for naught, folks. There's an easier way. There's a better way. There's a complete way. And that's not it. They're not offering that. And that's why Jesus said he'll be a stumbling block for these people. And certainly he is. Anyway, let's read on, though. Verse 27. "For as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." So it's going to be very quick, is essentially what this is saying. It'll be like a flash of lightning. It'll happen so fast. And people will realize what's happened. They'll know after the fact. And they'll get this feeling in the pit of their stomach. They'll know that they missed it. For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. This is saying that there will be some after effects of this when the coming of the Son of Man happens. People will know. They'll understand something has happened. This connotation represents that those who are really deep into sin will gather around where this has happened, or gather around or understand that this has happened, and they'll sink lower into their state of affairs because they know they've missed the boat, they've missed the mark. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. So is this talking about literally the sun going dark and the moon not giving its light and stars literally falling from heaven? I don't know. I mean, it remains to be seen. A lot of this stuff, it's hard to tell if this written word here, if this is supposed to be interpreted literally or if there's some other interpretation. And believe me, there's about 70 billion different interpretations of all these things. So it's hard to say for certain what something like this means in the scripture. But let's put it this way. The whole world order will be shaken up is essentially what this says. And not just the world order or the physical world order here. The spiritual order that's been going on here will be shaken up. In verse 30 it says, "And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn. And they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory." This could be interpreted in several ways as well. Like I said, there's about 70 billion different interpretations of all these things. Is this going to literally be what we physically see happening in the sky, something like this? Or will this be that maybe the stars that we see in the sky will be different from where they were? Maybe. It could be any number of things, right? A new sign, the sign of the Son of Man. Well, that would equate to, if you look at it from the astrological viewpoint and from the viewpoint of many people who follow some of these occult teachings, that would be the sign of Aquarius in the sky, wouldn't it? The Son of Man in heaven. So maybe this constellation will shift its place in the sky. Well, these are all things you have to think about. Who knows? But it says here, "Then all the tribes of the earth shall mourn. And they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory." It may be once we see some of these things happen, maybe too late. Or there's another possibility here. This might not actually be describing actual physical events that go on here. This could all be allegorical or metaphorical. There's like I said, there's about 70 billion different interpretations of all this stuff. And I'm not one to tell you what you should believe or what you should think. But understand that there are certain truths that have been conveyed to us in the Bible, especially, and by Jesus Christ himself, who's speaking largely in Matthew 24 here. And that's why this is such an important passage of scripture, because these are things that he has told us. Now, we may interpret them in different ways, but it's important that we understand these are important words to heed, because this just might be a warning. Well, it is a warning, undeniably so, even if it might be allegorical or metaphorical in some regards, the things he's saying. We'll understand when we see it come to pass. We'll know. We will instinctively know, okay, this is what this meant. And this biblical prophecy has come to fruition. "And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other." So there's the sound of the trumpet idea. And we've seen the past couple years, YouTube and all over the place, people have been posting video and audio of sounds of what sounds like trumpets coming from the sky. Is this something we need to be concerned with? I mean, is it literally talking about something like this? I don't know. There's, like I said, so many different interpretations of these things. And I'm not an expert on all the different ways to interpret this, but let's just say the signs are there. I mean, whether it's an actual physical sign or not. I mean, we've seen and we've we've heard stories about these trumpet sounds and stuff through the sky. We've seen so many people post things about this that maybe there's something to it. Maybe it is kind of a forewarning of things to come. The next part, starting in verse 32. Now Jesus is telling his disciples, he says, "Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender, and putteth forth leaves, ye know that summer is nigh. So likewise, when ye see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors." So let's pause there for a second and break this down. So Jesus says, look at this fig tree. Now, when you see that the branch is tender and it's putting forth leaves, you know summer is very near. So you know that it's springtime. You see that the tree is springing to life. So you know summer is just weeks away. It's very, very near. He says, so likewise, when you see all these things we just covered in the previous 31 verses there, when ye see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. So he's saying the end of the age is near. It's at the doors. It's right here. We're in it. That's what he's telling you. He's saying, understand that when you see all these things, that's when the end of the age is going to be. So we see all these things happening. And even if you accept that it's just allegory that's being talked about, well, we see things literally transpiring here on Earth today that equate one-to-one with these different things that were talked about. So it's undeniable that these things are coming to fruition, that these things are happening in some sense, some way, shape, or form, that we're seeing these things. And he's telling us, when you see these things, know that it's near, even at the doors, which means very, very close. Verily, I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. So once again, we have an important idea. Whenever he says something like, verily, I say unto you, that means pay special close attention to what's being said here. So he says, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. Well, which generation? Well, probably the generation that's seeing all these signs. And some people would argue that, well, they've been saying the end is coming from ever since the beginning of the church age and stuff like that, that everybody, it's always been, well, we're in the end times. We've seen all these things coming to pass and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're not. But it says here, this generation shall not pass till all these things are fulfilled or be fulfilled. So we see, if we look at events of the world the past few years here, all the things we've seen going on, and especially in relating to what I'm calling wars and rumors of wars here, all these things are being fulfilled right now. So it says, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. There's a very good likelihood that anybody alive today will, or at least somebody who's alive today, will see the end of the age and the beginning of the new age. That's what we can infer from that. But let's read on here, verse 35. It says, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. But of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Here's the thing. Okay, from those two verses, that's 35 and 36. We know everything here in this physical world has a beginning and has an end. He says the same is true of heaven. So this different realm. This too will pass away, but it says his words shall not pass away. So that's an important thing. So that means that there's something that transcends all of these different worlds or realities or planes of existence. He's inferring here heaven's a physical place too, isn't it? Because it must have a beginning and an end as well. That's what's inferred there in that passage. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. So God himself being the Word, he is the Word, he was the Word and was with the Word in the beginning, as so it says in the Bible here, shall not pass away, and the spirit of man, being kind of a fractal portion of the spirit of God, shall also not pass away in that viewpoint, if you see it from that. But these physical places that are known as heaven and earth shall pass away. So once again we see, and this goes back to different Christian doctrine, and theological doctrines and stuff like that, how we'll be resurrected again in a physical body. We'll be transfigured. It's a type of transmutation. transfiguration, kind of the whole alchemical process on the face of things with all that. This will be the manifestation of that. So we'll be transfigured so that we could exist in this heaven realm. It's a different type of body. It's a transcendent body, a perfect body. But even that will pass away. The word shall not pass away. These physical realities may pass away, but the word won't. And there may be new physical realities that we'll transcend to at some point. So all these things we could speculate on. And like I said, I reserve the right to be totally wrong about all of this, but it doesn't seem far off the mark for anybody that really wants to study and think about a lot of these things. Then it also says here, I think we read this in verse 36, but of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. So there's no way we could know when the exact end of the age is going to happen and when all these things will take place and when we'll be transfigured. We can't possibly know. Because he says here, nobody knows except for the Father himself in heaven. It's not for us to know as to the when. Let's read on, verse 37. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came, and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. So we could infer from those couple verses here, by and large, most of the world will not have a clue any of this is coming. And it'll happen quickly. Like Jesus said, it'll be like lightning flashing from the east to the west. It'll happen that quickly, where this age change will happen, and those who are to advance to the next level, so to say, will be transfigured out of here, and the other ones will be here still. Or maybe it's different. Maybe the ones that transcend will stay here, and the ones that are quote-unquote left behind, the ones that aren't found worthy to transcend this spiritual state, will sink lower into a lower frequency or something similar to that, if we want to think in those kind of terms. Who's to say? Who's to say for sure? I can't claim to know how all this will work or how all this works, but it's definitely an archetype of an alchemical process being done here. It's the enlightenment, the transmutation, the advancement of man to the next level. And it'll all happen in a flash, in like almost instantaneously, and no one will see it coming. Because it says people will just be living their lives like normal, like it was in the days of Noah. Everybody just went about their business, even in the days of Noah, Noah was telling people what was going to happen, but they all scoffed, just like they do today. They scoff, they don't believe it. They don't accept it. They don't want to accept it. They don't want to think about it. They just want to live their lives. And so they will do so until they're swept away by the floodwaters. So this is the same kind of thing. And this could be all allegorical too, or a metaphor. Who knows for sure? I can't claim to know. It's always good to analyze these things and think about them. Then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken and the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken, and the other left. Watch, therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. So that was verses 40, 41, and 42. And what it's saying here is an idea that reinforces the concept of what has largely been called the rapture in Christian theology. That some people will be taken up and others will be left behind. Some people will be transcending and others will remain. Some people will be able to make that jump and others will not. And it's a sad state of affairs, but this is kind of what we've been prepped for the past 2,000 years. It's this changing of the age. Some people are going to transcend and others are not. Others are going to be swept away. And this reinforces the idea of what the the Christians call the rapture. St. Paul spoke of this in some of the other books and stuff like that. But here, directly, you have from the words of Jesus himself saying that two will be in the field, the one shall be taken and the other one left. That's telling that there's going to be this division. There's going to be this harvest. There will be the separating between the wheat and the tares. It does say, watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. So it's telling people, watch for these signs that we see. Keep your heart and your soul and your mind right with God. Keep that right relationship with God. Be mindful and have faith. And watch and see what's going on in the world. And always be prepared. Stand in your righteousness. Stand up for your convictions. Stand for what's right. Do those right things. That's essentially what it's telling you. Live with integrity. Practice what you preach. Stand up for what's right. We stand on our convictions and stand for what's right and do that which is right. I don't think we could go wrong. I really don't. I mean, I live my life by one simple philosophy, and that's if you know something is the right thing to do, do it. That's it. It's pretty simple. It's cut and dry. If you know something is the right thing to do, do it. And you can't go wrong. You really can't. I think God will reward those who do right. Who do what's right, regardless of how difficult it is, or regardless of whatever obstacles there may be in doing the right thing, just do the right thing. If you know it's the right thing to do, do it. It's simple as that. I've failed at times to do that, and I still fail. I mean, I'm a flawed man. I'm a flawed human being. We all are. So we are going to fail, but if we do our very best and our utmost to try to do that which is right, that we know is right, then I think we could stand firm and stand tall in our convictions and our integrity. And maybe in that day, we'll be spared. We'll be one of those that's taken away because we've done the right things or we've done the righteous thing. We've done what we think is best. And that's all we could do when it comes down to it. Anyway, let's read on. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched, and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh. So once again, he's reinforcing this idea. Be watchful. Be ready. Recognize the signs of the times. We're in that season, folks. We see these things are at the doors. We see summer is nigh, as it says earlier in the verse, when it goes back to the parable of the fig tree. We see these things have come to pass. They've come to fruition. We're at that time, and he could show up any time. So be ready. Be mindful. Keep your heart and your spirit right with God. Keep that right relationship with God. And be watchful and mindful of the things you do, and try to live with integrity. Stand up for what's right. Do what's right. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in as such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. And we're going to pause there for a second. Once again, he's saying, verily, which is a way of saying, verily I say unto you, which is a way of saying, pay close attention here. This is an absolute truth, and you need to understand it. So, in that day or that time, when God does decide to come back here, and this whole changeover of the ages takes place, if he finds you doing that which is right and good, then you'll be in a good place, won't you? But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And that's the end of chapter 24 of the book of Matthew. And essentially what that's saying there is those people who are the scoffers who will say, nah, yeah, that's all nonsense or whatever, and will just go about doing that which they see as socially acceptable here in this world, and manipulating people, taking advantage, and doing all those bad things to others, they'll be caught off guard. And they'll be the ones that'll be cut down in all of this. They'll not be the ones that will transcend this and make it into this new age to come. Although many of them, that's what they seek. And all of this, I wanted to go through this tonight simply because of the different facets of these signs of the times that we're told about in Matthew 24 there, and how it relates to wars and rumors of wars, how these are all facets of a silent weapon system that's been used against us in a quiet war since bare minimum 1954. How this has been done, it's a different type of warfare. Wanted to point that out, and that's exactly what Matthew 24 in verse 6, when it talks about wars and rumors of wars, and the following verses, it delineates that this will be a different type of warfare than what was considered conventional warfare, or what people would think of as war. And that's what we're living through, folks. We're being socially manipulated. We're being socially engineered. It's a war for the mind. It's a different type of war. It's spiritual warfare at the heart of it all, but it's a different type of warfare. It's domestic warfare, all right? It's not your militaristic type, combat type warfare or anything of that sort that you would normally associate with war. It's a different kind. It's a psi war. It's an information war. It's all these different things, and it's been levied against the common man by those few at the top of the power structure here, those quote-unquote elites of this world, the ones that want to cement their power here, and the dark occultists that run this place that are the guiding forces and principles behind these quote-unquote elites of this world. They're the ones pulling the strings, and they're the ones that are waging this war against the common man. And it is a war, make no doubt about it. And that's exactly the sign of the times that we're looking for. All these things have come to fruition now. We've been warned. We're at that point now in history where we're at the door. We're right at the door of this change of ages, and anything could happen. And we're not sure, I'm certainly not sure, what it's going to look like. Honest to goodness, I don't know. Is all this stuff written in the Bible, is it all metaphor or allegory? It's possible. Could it be literal? Also possible. I don't know. What I do know is I have the sense now, this tinge in my spirit, that tells me something big's going to be happening here very soon. And it's something we need to be mindful of, and it's something that we need to be spiritually ready for, more so than anything else. Look at the signs around you. Know that we're in that place. Know the season we're in, like the parable of the fig tree says. Know that summer is nigh. Summer is very near. This is all coming to fruition in front of us. It could happen at any time. And all these things that are happening in the world, these are all super signs of what's been written about in the Bible and other places, all these prophecies and stuff being fulfilled in front of our faces. And people are still willfully blind to it. They don't want to have to believe that. They don't want to have that uncomfortable feeling that they might be accountable to a creator. They don't want to think in those terms. So they'll let their cognitive dissonance kick in, and they'll just continue on pretending like they've been going along all along here, and how people will just continue on just trying to get by and try and make everything as okay as possible and just coast through and find entertainment where they can and ignore all the signs of the times in front of them. Not think in those spiritual terms, just in the sheerly physical aspect of things. That's the hyper-materialist viewpoint that's been so ingrained in society and we've been socially programmed to accept. But we need to take a step back and think in more spiritual terms. Rethink your relationship with God. Rethink your relationship with the Creator. Make sure you get that right. Make sure everything's well in your spirit. Because we're coming upon a time where we're going to need that. We're going to need that faith and that hope and that spiritual relationship with our Creator in order to get through so that we can transcend this place or transcend this time. So that we could make something better, move on to the next level, step up. And we don't want to be the ones that are caught here doing all the wrong things. We don't want to be the ones that are ignorant of all this information, or the ones that willfully turn a blind eye to it, because we don't want to accept that there is some modicum of truth to it, and that there is this very real possibility that we may be accountable to a creator for our actions. That terrifies people. But you know what? It only terrifies people who don't have that right relationship with their creator. The ones that don't want to admit that there is a creator who has laid down natural laws, natural moral codes that need to be abided by, that people are answerable to. That makes people very uncomfortable. That's why they don't like to have their worldview questioned at all. That's why they would love to believe that we live on this spinning ball flying through the space at a million miles an hour or whatever it is, in the infinitesimal void, and it all happened by accident and we're just a speck that came about by accident. People are comforted by thinking that there's nothing beyond this physical realm for some reason. People that don't want to have accountability or responsibility for themselves or others. That's the bottom line here. Okay, so that's the important thing. If you get nothing else out of tonight's conversation, just get this main point. Get your heart and your mind and your soul right with God. Get that right relationship with your Creator. And be mindful of the things in the world. Recognize the signs of the times. Then we'll be fine. That's the bottom line here. We've had these weapon systems used against us now for many years, and this is exactly what was outlined in Matthew 24. It's these weapon systems that have brought about these other things, these pestilences, these earthquakes in diverse places, these famines, things like that. It's all part of the social engineering campaign that's been going on against mankind. It's all been engineered this way, folks. It's all artificial scarcity. It's all based on these ideas, eugenics, artificial scarcity, population reductionist ideas, the idea that there's too many people. These ideas, they go back quite a ways, and they're all flawed. They're all based on fallacy, all of them. And these are the ideas that have been leveraged against us and that they use against us with these silent weapon systems. All of this stuff has been manufactured. It's been created artificially here. And that's exactly what's being outlined there in Matthew 24. It's a different type of war. And it's been going on, and it's actually inculcated all of these other things that have come about because of it. Pestilences and plagues and famines, earthquakes, weather manipulation. All of these things. All signs of the times. All brought about by the same source point. All brought about by this war machine that's been running. This precursor to the Antichrist system. Anyway, that's all I've got for tonight for you folks. Thanks for hanging out with me for a little bit, and really think about these things. Contemplate some of these ideas. Take time to pray. Take time to get your heart and your soul right with God. Because we're living in some unprecedented times here. And I don't know what's going to happen next, but I just do have this feeling in my spirit that something big's coming. So, you know, that being the case, we need to be mindful of that. Look at all these signs that we've been told to watch for and understand the season we're living in. So, that's it. Thanks again, guys. Have a good night. Come with me.